Great to see you back. And as I said before, we'll just move right into the sit. So, as before, I'm going to ask each of us to close our eyes. Oh, I do want to say that sometimes the body might need to lie down. So, please pay attention to what the body needs. You're welcome to keep your camera on if you're lying down. Please know that all of you is welcome in whatever way that we're going to show up. So, please just take care of the body. And in so doing, as we close our eyes, to allow us to invite in a sense of alertness, some availability. And these qualities are irrespective of whatever posture the body's in. Yeah. But these teachings are ennobling. They're on a path to freedom. It is a noble and courageous endeavor that we are here together embarking on. So can we allow ourselves to open up to and receive the awareness of how it is to be in this body? And so taking a moment just to allow the body to move, perhaps any micro movements that might bring a little bit more ease to the body, perhaps a rolling up and back of the shoulders, an opening of the chest, relaxing of the jaw. Letting the exhale be just a bit longer than the inhale. And for the anchor of our sit today, I want to stay with the body, mindfulness of the body. Again, the sense of an anchor, because the powers of the mind can be so strong, right? So letting the attention, excuse me, rest in the body, the points of contact with the chair, the floor, the earth. And to, I'm going to play around here a little bit, but to both allow the attention to say on 50, 60% of the attention to stay, to rest upon that which is anchoring you, what's supporting you, the chair, the cushion, the floor. These are our roots. Yeah. And if it's helpful to imagine beautiful roots coming from our feet into loamy soil, drinking in the goodness of the earth. Or if we're sitting, if it feels more grounding to imagine roots coming from our tuchus into the earth, just grounding, rooting, the sense of belonging to the earth, being held, supported by the earth. It was just back in Marin County in California, and to be around the redwoods was just incredible. And if it's a helpful image, or whatever trees are in your local environment, imagine if it's helpful, sitting amongst the trees or rocks or in a field, to have that visual connection to the earth and allowing the body to anchor in. And then allowing, again, as I said before, maybe a split of attention if this feels useful. If not, let it go. Just to be on a much more open awareness of the body, different sensations that move to the foreground of our attention. Sometimes in sits, a leg might fall asleep, or we might notice some level of discomfort that kind of grabs our attention. So we're both anchoring our attention in the body and these connective points, or where we can root into the earth, and then a more open awareness as sensations, some of which will be pleasant, some of which will be unpleasant, move through the body. the other sensations can simply be if the hands are holding each other, hands on the legs, feet on the floor. And we know the mind will do what it does, right? Telling stories, comparing, making lists, replaying conversations. Okay, we can just let that go. Note it, oh, thinking, and then bringing the attention back to the body. Thoughts that may enter this open awareness. Yeah, totally fine. We're just setting the intention to be in the body, resting on the connective place where our body meets the earth. And then allowing for this open-ended awareness that we may direct towards physical sensation, hands holding each other, hands on the legs, different sensations arise, and we know thoughts will come in. You know, we can just build that in. Okay. And we just notice the thoughts and practice just, okay, thank you for coming and watching it go by. Some, of course, will be more seductive than others. Okay, we get caught. And then we remember, oh, wait, can I come back to the body? Please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we incline the mind to be aware and available to the experience of being in this body, in this breath, in this inhale, in this exhale, in this breath, and then in this breath. Can we rest in the moment to momentness of a sit? Yeah. Rather than thinking of the whole trajectory or, oh God, how much longer is this going to be? But just resting, oh, this moment. And now this moment, this breath, this sensation, this availability to being anchored in the body on this earth. Thank you. Thank you for ringing the bell and welcome again. I hope that sit was whatever it was, right? Sits kind of can be so many different things in the span of 30 minutes. And today I wanted to talk about, so in the book, The Parmes by Ajahn Suchita, which I quote all the time, I don't know if you can see it, it's kind of blurry there. It's a book about the perfections of the heart. And what I often don't talk about when I reference this book is the opening in which Ajahn Suchita is pointing to sort of the point of all this and the different floods, as the book, the subtitle of the book is Crossing the Ways to Cross Life's Floods. And the floods in which he's referring to in the broadest scheme, it's this way in which the externals of our life meet the internals. And sometimes our internal world is so quiet and steady and chill that there's a lot of spaciousness to whatever those meeting points are with the external world. Often it's not like that. The internal world might be a little more chaotic, a little rougher, whether there's a, you know, from the guest house Rumi's poem, sort of a meanness, a depression, you know, when we're scared or when we're caught or in the trauma vortex, little t or capital T, it makes it much harder to meet the externals. And these days, and I think I'm sure through time, the externals are hard. I do feel like they are harder now in the last, I don't know, since COVID, it seems like it's sharper. The world feels sharper. There's harder things. There's so many more studies done on loneliness and isolation. And well, I won't even go down the list of things that are happening in the world that can be stressful or impede upon us or kind of have the sharpness of the meeting point. And I could find his wording or not. I won't worry about it. But just that a willingness to consider that inner point of intersection of where our internal world meets the external. The external we can do very little about, even if we control or set up our lives as well as we possibly can. Things happen, right? That's the nature of sort of first noble truth. In this human form, there is suffering. And the suffering, dukkha, can be distress or disappointment. Right? It comes with the territory. We haven't done anything wrong. That's just what comes in. That's part of that's sort of the agreement we made in coming into this realm. We're going to suffer. And these teachings are like, here, well, let's look at how we can mitigate the suffering so we can't, to not add on to it what's optional. And what the pointings in the development of the perfections of the heart, which as a side note, see if I can do all 10, it's generosity and integrity and wisdom, wise resolve. I shouldn't have messed it up. I'm going to go a little bit out of order. Effort we put in, truthfulness, patience, equanimity, patience, and discernment, wisdom. That's all 10, a little bit out of order, I apologize. As we cultivate or understand or drop into these 10 perfections of the heart, it's an astonishingly a helpful, practical, and beautiful roadmap. Allow these qualities, these perfections of the heart, to guide us at that point of intersection of the internal and the external, but perhaps more importantly, to work with the internals, right? Where we get caught, where we're stressed, where we want, where we don't want. The restlessness, the agitation in the mind, the doubt, the hindrances, right? That which obscures the pure-hearted nature of the heart and the stillness of the mind. We all have this experience. Sometimes we have all five at the same time. Kind of a classic hindrance, all hindrance attack. We're like, ugh, this feels terrible. Or sometimes we can just be more caught in that mind that wants, the mind that doesn't. And in this, map is the right word. I kind of like to think of these heart perfections as the constellation by which we can look up to orient, where am I? Am I caught? Am I this scared, fearful, feeling traumatized? And can I look at these guiding principles of the perfected heart as resource and refuge? And the mythology goes, that in the many lifetimes preceding Siddhartha's incarnation as Siddhartha to become the Buddha, that the Janaka tales, the tales of his previous lives before this particular incarnation, that he would try out these different perfections of the heart. And he lived those perfections as a way of getting ready to prepare to be incarnated as Siddhartha. Sometimes I find that depressing. It's like, it's going to take lifetimes. And sometimes it's like, yeah, probably. And that's not to say we can't make phenomenal progress and have a sense of freedom, whether it's momentary or a few moments strung together or places where it feels more anchored in a freedom from all the agitation that can come with that current of intersectionality. And to the point of the book, Crossing Life's Floods, Suchito points to four floods that are just internal to our life's experience. The first flood of experience of interference almost are the sense doors. So the sense doors of sight and smell and touch. that's funny. If I do things out of order, I can't keep track. So there's thought, sense, touch, taste, and smell. Six. These sense doors, where we just take in information. We take in senses. We take in that which is beautiful. We take in that which is horrible. Classic sense of, I would like more of this. I would like less of that, right? We do it all. This is beautiful. That's not. This smells so good. Ooh, that smells bad. The touch, the taste, and the thinking mind is included in Buddhist psychology as a sense door, right? This thought pattern I'm caught in, oh, sucks. Or it's so pleasant. And being able to, and again, why I so often will try and anchor us in the body, one, because it's so helpful for me to be able, like if I'm anchored and have a sense of being in the bones in my body, it's much easier to have that awareness of, oh, this is what's coming in through the sense doors. There's a liking, there's a disliking. So that's one of the floods that we navigate and kind of one of the hardest when we're not, when we don't have that capacity of the awareness to notice what's happening. And this was sort of up, like I started practicing when I think I was like 29, but sort of most of my teen years and 20s was just ping-ponging around of, I like this, I like that, I don't like this, I want that. And then being so much at the mercy of a very untrained, unpleasant, steady mind state. Yeah. And through these teachings to be able to, there's choices to be made here, but the choices are born out of having that awareness to see, is this helpful? Or just noticing, oh, there's a craving here. There's a sutta, and forgive me, I'm going to read from my computer. The classic, and so many of you know this, Jata Sutta, a tangle within, a tangle without. People are entangled in a tangle. Gautama, I ask you this, who can untangle this tangle? The Buddha replied, a man, person, woman, established in virtue, discerning, developing discernment in mind, a monk, ardent, astute, he can untangle this tangle. Those whose passion, aversion, and ignorance have faded away, our hearts, their influence ended, for them the tangle is untangled. Where name and form, along with perception and impingement and form, totally stop without trace, there is where the tangle is cut. That's a tall order, right? To let go of the perception, the grasping, the aversion and ignorance. It is and it isn't. If we allow our scope to just be, it's this moment. Am I caught somewhere in this moment? Yeah. Okay, can I loosen a little? Or am I not caught? Ah, hallelujah. All right. Rick Hansen's a really teacher, spirit rock, wonderful teacher and neuroscientist, points to that being able to notice the absence of, and the Buddha talked about this too, when there's the absence of craving, the absence of aversion. These are important things to note because that's a sense of, oh, there's freedom here. And I love, as I've spoken over the years so highly of this book, but this way of being also able to untangle the tanglements of the mind is by resting in the heart and resting on these qualities of perfecting the heart. Discernment, wisdom being very much one of them, Sinnatsutta, but it's also the ability to discern, is this thought, is this attraction to this particular smell, sight, taste, sense, thought, am I caught in it? Is it leading me to more suffering? Or is there a liberatory quality of ease and peace and settledness, equanimity, contentment in the mind and in the body? The second flood is that of becoming, the effort of, we think in the future, like, oh, I want to do this. I should become this. You know, and it's interesting in a culture, this dominant culture is very prone to be supporting of what are you going to do? What have you done? What achievements have you, can you check off? And in the service of becoming, and there's a way that there's a skillfulness in our maturity and our development and how do we grow in wholesome ways and ways to be of service, however we want to define that. How do we develop the capacities of the heart to do good work in the world? Again, however we define that, as distinct from where the ego can get a hold of, like I'm striving, I'm becoming, it's kind of almost outside of ourselves. It's not necessarily connected to the heart, but more ego-based of, I want to become this, I want to have this, I want to own this. Suchito writes, it's becoming the flood of time and identity, worries and expectations of the past and of the future. So it's very much not in the present moment. What have I done? What am I going to do? Awareness that our actions have effects. So bringing in the karma, all our actions lead us somewhere. Yeah, they impact others, whether we are the inheritors of our own actions, good or bad. We can direct our sense of what a path of our becoming by looking through that filter of, is this beneficial to me or to others? Is this creating harm for myself or for others? As a way of shaping the path of our becoming. Here we are becoming, but it's paying attention to these actions I have consequences for myself and for others. Can we slow down enough, resting in enough awareness? Are my actions of benefit? And again, the constellation of truthfulness and patience and wisdom and effort and energy and generosity, integrity, equanimity, and loving kindness can help us orient to, oh, actually, no. What I'm doing right now is outside my sense of integrity. What I'm doing right now is outside my sense of discernment or wisdom. The third flood, so to speak, that we will navigate most days of our lives is the particularly, oh my gosh, now in this time in our humanity is the flood of views, holding on to views, opinions, dogma. And I quote this all the time from the Metta Sutta, of, it is said to be the sublime abiding, those who do not hold to fixed views are said to be the most liberated. Or that is the path of liberation, to not hold on to fixed views. I'm not quoting that exactly. But the Buddha was very clear about the dangers that can come when we hold on to fixed views. I'm right. Which then by correlation necessitates you're wrong. Which leads to isolation and separatism. And oh, we're living in such a time of folks seeking refuge in the fixed views. I am right. This is what I believe to be right. And you are wrong. This is, again, outside the bounds of wisdom and discernment and well-reasoned thought and beliefs that are true to us. I certainly have a lot of opinions and views about Buddhism that are, it's so important to me. But there's a way of, not everyone's going to share this view. Okay. And there was a time, I think during COVID, because I could feel myself concretizing around certain views of to really practice with not holding on to fixed views. And what was that like? And it was a lot more spacious. Yeah. This blind adherence to concepts. And we're seeing that in the political realm and in other ways that's this isolation that comes of the othering that can come as a response to fixed views. There's also a righteousness that can come of, I'm right, you're wrong. And that's born out of ignorance, which is the fourth and most fundamental flood, the force that undermines our direct investigation of experience. So again, that they're linked in the way of, I can hold on to something that I believe or know to be true, Have I actually investigated it? Investigated the impact? How does it resonate with my heart? Is it in alignment with this constellation of the Paramis? Is it true? Is it wise? Is there patience infused? Is there loving kindness and equanimity infused in this view that I have? Does it lead me to a sense of ease and contentment and equanimity? Or does it lead me to be stressed out and tight? Those are the indicators of something's not right. He writes, we learn to see these floods of phenomena without attributing self or other culture or religion to them. And there isn't a, and I think this, he writes that this isn't the teaching of passive acceptance. And sometimes equanimity can have that, well, this is just how it is. We accept it. And it's like, no, there's some skillful, wise action, but that's born out of responsiveness as opposed to reactivity. And often if I'm in a place of a clenched view, this is right, I will tend to be reactive to whether it's in my personal life or politically or in whatever realm. So how can we cultivate by leaning into these teachings of the heart to create a sense of settledness within ourselves, a congruence with an open heart? There's no more powerful place, I would say, than we're steady in the heart. It's wisdom. Then we're able to extend that wise response, that responsiveness to the externalities, that intersection of internal and external, but also to our own internal world that can get pretty rocky. Yeah, because of what traumas and causes and conditions and hardships and all kinds of stressors that are bear upon our day-to-day lives. To be able to turn towards one, the belief in the perfections of the heart. And this touches me so much because I was raised as a Catholic and the belief was you've sinned from the get-go. There's something inherently wrong. You're somehow bad. And that was, I don't know that that's true to the Christian Catholic teachings, but that was kind of what I grew up with, my family's version of it. You're kind of doomed to hell unless you like really worked hard to get out of that track. And this generosity, I feel like, oh no, the natural perfections of the heart, they're here. So we just like clear away the perfections or the hindrances that get in our way from really being able to embody that heartfulness. Many of you know when the morning after the Buddha's enlightenment, he thought about teaching and was like, yeah, it's too hard. No one's going to get it. Then he was visited from heavenly Brahmas like, no, no. It's really important for you to teach them. Like they have but little dust in their eyes and you can help clear the dust for people to be able to see. And here we are 2,600 years later, clearing dust away. It sometimes when I was like, really, we are still have so much dust. We do. And this known truth that he taught of you can, if I did it, you can do it. Yeah. That it's possible to reside with these perfections of the heart. And I talk a lot about the divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas, which are the four qualities of the heart of loving kindness and compassion, joy and equanimity. And then these 10 perfections, these qualities that, again, as I hold them, this constellation that allows us to check in, am I going the right way? Through my speech, actions, thoughts, words, beliefs, how I interact with the sensual world? Am I on a path that will lead me to a place of freedom, a place of ease? Ease, not so much in life will be easy, you know, but more of responsiveness of, oh, okay, I can manage this. That intersecting point of the internal and external, there's a little more give, a little more spaciousness around how to meet that. So from Rumi, today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are 100 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Mm-hmm. How do we allow ourselves to connect into that heart space? Step out of fear thinking. Yeah. We wake up empty and frightened. Okay. Mm. We don't need to make that into a problem. We understand that to be something that may just be true. And we have a choice. We can step out of fear thinking. Yeah. Mm. Let the beauty we love be what we do. We have to understand, though, and connect to what that beauty is, which isn't always easy. We don't take classes in school that, like, what do you love? What's beautiful to you? We might, but not in any way that sort of can grab hold and really allow us to be acculturated to that. I'm not acculturated, to really foster that inner knowing. From Ellen Bass, the thing is to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, and everything you've held dear crumbles like burnt paper in your hands, your throat filled with the silt of it. When grief sits with you, its tropical heat thickening the air heavy as water, more fit for gills than lungs. When grief weights you like your own flesh, only more of it, an obesity of grief. You think, how can a body withstand this? Then you hold life like a face between your palms, a plain face, no charming smile, no violet eyes. And you say, yes, I will take you and I will love you again. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. That's a lot of words. But just allowing your attention to come back into your own body. Feeling your feet on the ground and connecting in again to what the sit bones are resting upon, that you can feel perhaps a sense of abiding at home in your body. And I want to invite each of us to consider a circumstance or a situation where there's kind of an abrupt jarring of the internal and the external. Something, whatever's happening internally, meets with an external circumstance, whether it's a relationship with someone we love or a work situation or really sort of any of those floods of sights and sense and touch and taste and thought, more internal, but that's a reaction to something that we're taking in through the sense doors, as where we can bump up against our own ignorance or our own fixed views, our own sense of future orienting, of becoming what I think I should be doing, what I think I should have done. These different experiences of meeting the external world, or just the hardships of how it is to be a human in May of 2023. If that makes sense, that point of intersection, your internal world meeting something external, where there's some stress, not the hardest thing ever, but just where there's some discomfort and stress. And we'll see if this makes sense, but in your mind's eye, if you can imagine all of us together lying in some beautiful field, that's a designated dark sky, so there's no interference from light noise. And up above us is the most miraculous and brilliant constellation, known as the Pleiades. And you can see each star, the star of generosity, the star of integrity, the star of renunciation, which I had failed to mention, of letting go, the star of wisdom, of energy and patience, truthfulness, resolve, kindness, and equanimity. And the shape of this constellation, Pleiades, is unique to each one of us. Some stars will be brighter than another, than others. And with your back on, as we lay on our backs, looking up at this marvel of this constellation, to let yourself consider which of these stars, generosity, integrity, renunciation, wise use of energy, of wisdom, patience, truthfulness, resolve, kindness, equanimity, most resonates as being helpful on this particular day, or in this guided imagery, on this particular night. Would patience be more helpful in navigating this intersection of internal or out and external? Would truthfulness, resolve, wise use of energy, generosity, integrity, equanimity, of these stars, which is brightest to you in terms of allowing yourself to guide yourself home to the inner refuge of the wise heart, the steady mind, home to this place of the capacity for the wise response, home to this place of knowing your deepest goodness. And check it out. If we play with this stress or this challenge, oh, if I bring in a little generosity, if I bring in a little more wisdom, does something shift? If I let go a little, does something shift? And just allowing yourself to feel into how it might be to allow yourself to be guided by this particular constellation in whatever form it takes for you. It's always there, day or night, because all of these qualities are already here. They're part of the heart. Right? We were born with this capacity. We just need to remember and clear away the dust in our eyes, clear away the hindrances that prevent us from being able to move in the world from this place. So I'm going to stop here and thank you so much for your attention.